Hello and welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and I'm now supposed to introduce myself by telling you a time that I got grounded, but instead I'm going to tell you that I was never grounded. So
la-dee-da. I'm Matthew Gatos, and one of the few times I ever got grounded as a kid was because I went to a friend's house in like third or fourth grade, and while I was there, he tried to go to boobs.com on his mom's work computer, and it didn't lead to anything, but his mom later saw it in the computer history and told my mom that we went to boobs.com.
My name is Moneyness, and I also didn't get grounded a ton, but something that feels similar is that in ninth grade, I was on an overnight field trip for a debate meet, and in my room of girls, we invited some boys from another school to like spend the night with us. Obviously, nothing happened. It was just a bunch of us in a room, but the boys from our school ratted us out, and we got like, we couldn't go on field trips for a whole year with the school.
Whoa.
Wow.
And some of the people in my room were 11th graders, so they couldn't go on field trips for their entire senior year.
Oh, brutal.
Yep.
And I'm Sari Riley, and mine is much younger. The most memorable time I got grounded was when I was 5, I think, and I crossed the street from our apartment complex to the mailboxes without permission. And that was one of my only rules, and so I got grounded. But my dad let me check out Blockbuster movies, so it wasn't even really a very intense grounding. It was like, you have to stay inside now, but I feel bad that I grounded you for a really long time, and we're going to watch movies together.
Sweet. And in this episode, we are talking about Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire, and Mari is going to tell us the plot of that movie.
I mean, basically, we could just play back Sari's prediction, because she's getting so good at these. When I feel like I've started my plot.
I mean, this title gave her a lot of help, I think, the title
true.
Of this one specifically.
Okay, maybe it's that the titles are getting very overly specific, but we'll see. We'll see. In this movie, we start with a movie within a movie, as 13-year-old Adam Hansen is watching this vampire movie in which a vampire has a woman in his thrall, but her true love arrives to break it. As he's watching, meanwhile, his sister Chelsea is taking a phone call from a boy, and his little brother Taylor is watching from behind the couch, kind of scaredy cat-like. Their mom, Lynette, who I truly was going to call Aunt Hilda the whole time, but I figured that would be confusing because she's the mom in this movie. She gets home and she sends everyone off to do their homework and stop watching scary movies and all of that. So Adam goes upstairs, but he doesn't do his homework. Instead, he's reading like a trashy sort of magazine called The Weekly Secret, because my boy is actually obsessed with like vampires and monsters and things. And inside of this magazine, there is an article about Malachi Van Helsing, who is a vampire hunter. So he's kind of reading that. The next day at school, Adam gets called on in class to read his homework essay out loud, but he didn't do it. So instead, he just reads directly from The Weekly Secret, and his teacher catches on real quick. She's like, is this like a real thing? And he's just like, no, it's in my magazine. So he gets in trouble. Also, Adam's best friend, Duffy, scored some backstage passes for a concert at the Harvest Festival this weekend. And Adam is super excited to go, except that when he gets home, his mom already knows about the essay thing. He didn't do his homework, so Adam is grounded. The sister, Chelsea, is making comments in the background the whole time and like kind of making fun of her brother. So she gets grounded too for good measure. This is very bad news because Adam has that concert to go to and Chelsea has a date to go on. They decide that the simplest plan, I guess, would be to get their mom, to set their mom up on a date so she'll be out of the house. And The Weekly Secret has a like a personals section. It's like vampire hunting, but also call for a date. And they contact a guy who like bills himself as like suave and debonair, but also hates Italian food. They have a moment where they're like, should we email the stranger? And they're like, nah, it's fine. So they email the stranger, they go with it, and they set up a date for their mom via email to meet at the grocery store that night. So downstairs, Adam takes the lead on guilt tripping his mother about how much happier they used to be before the divorce. And he's like, oh, I want pancakes. And she's like, oh, I've got ingredients. And he's like, oh, but I want chocolate chips.
We were only happy when we had chocolate chips, Mom.
I know. It was very oddly heartbreaking to watch Aunt Hilda be like, oh, I'll get you chocolate chips. So Adam effectively guilt trips his mom and they take a family trip to the grocery store. At the grocery store, we see a figure in a trench coat walking around and we think maybe this might be the vampire for a second. And the kids think so too after they strike out with a few men who are like not. Clearly not there to meet their mom. So they try to sort of follow this figure in a trench coat. But Lynette runs into Mr. Sheffield from The Nanny. And he's like super charming and like turns on the flirt. At first, Adam is like not understanding and he still wants to go after the guy with the trench coat. But Chelsea is like, no, look, Mom's flirting. This is working. And it does work. Mr. Sheffield and Lynette make a date. And when they get outside of the grocery store, the little brother, Taylor, sees Mr. Sheffield turn into a bat and fly away. And he's like, oh, no. So the little brother tries to tell Adam, like, at first he's like, what do vampires do? And like, what happens? And so Adam tells him all about how vampires get women in their thrall and like, you know, ruin their lives, whatever, the whole spiel. But Adam doesn't actually believe his little brother that Mr. Sheffield is a vampire, and also he's like really focused on getting to this concert. The next night, the night of the date, Lynette is kind of freaking out about the date. Like, she's very nervous about doing this whole thing. And Mr. Sheffield arrives, and he's also very awkward. He just kind of stares at the children without saying anything. So we did see him turn into a bat, but there was a moment where I was like, I can't remember if he's an actual vampire, if like the kid is seeing things. But like during the stare down, I was like, no, this man is evil. He's just staring these children down. I don't understand why. The kids convince their mom to get it together, to go on the date, and they head off. Taylor is still like very convinced that Mr. Sheffield is a vampire. So he sneaks out and like bikes after his mom to go save her from the vampire. Chelsea and Adam see this and they decide they have to go after him. So they also hop on their bikes and head off to find their mother. So they all end up like downtown at the restaurant where Mr. Sheffield and Lynette are eating. Like, she's not having a great time, to be honest. At first it's like, oh, she's nervous. But then it's like, I don't think she likes this guy. And Mr. Sheffield is being really intense about it too and like, go with it. There is power within you. So yeah, that is all happening. Adam figures out that to get Taylor to believe that Mr. Sheffield is not a vampire and to let the siblings go out, sneak out of the house without like ratting on him, like, he comes up with this plan. So he takes the little brother inside the restaurant and he's like, Mom, Mr. Sheffield, I'm so sorry, but Taylor thinks you're a vampire. So Mr. Sheffield plays along with it and he's like, oh, well, to prove that I'm not, let's do the spoon test, which is something he just invents, that vampires can't balance a spoon on their nose. So he does it effectively. Taylor totally buys it. He's like, fine, Mr. Sheffield isn't a vampire. And they turn to leave, but Adam sees that Mr. Sheffield is seated right in front of a large mirror and doesn't have a reflection. So now he is a believer as well. They go and drop their little brother off back at home, the two older kids, but then Adam tells Chelsea, no, we have to go back because Mr. Sheffield is definitely a vampire. Meanwhile, Taylor actually called Van Helsing, like the vampire hunter from the Weekly Secret, and like left a message like, my mom's on a date with a vampire. So this whole time, this dude who we met in the grocery store, who's the one wearing the trench coat, it turns out that he's Van Helsing and he's like trying to track down this vampire. We see him do a couple of things, like go to like the dealership where Mr. Sheffield bought his car because he didn't have one previously, and just generally trying to track this dude down. So he ends up going to the Hansen residence and like finding Taylor and being like, you rang. So he gets the details about Mom being on a date with the vampire and heads off to go catch them. Chelsea and Adam track their mom down now to a club where she has pulled, like, this whole time Mr. Sheffield is trying to, like, end the date and get to the, like, nom 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 portion of this date, but like Lynette is like, no, let's go do more fun things. So now they're at, like, a rockabilly sort of, like, club so they can dance, and so the kids track them down there, and Adam keeps trying ways to get Mr. Sheffield, like, away from his mom. He has the bouncer, like, throw her out, but he is a vampire, so he just keeps, like, sneaking his way in and things like that. Lynette gets called on stage because she used to be, like, a singer in a rock group, and so she's having the time of her life while all of this is happening, which, good for her, she deserves it. Taylor ends up sneaking out of the house and joining Van Helsing, even though Van Helsing was like, stay home, you're a child, but he sneaks into his car, and so now they're on the mission together, and everybody figures out that where they need to end up next is at the vampire's, like, mansion at the house where he's ultimately going to bring Lynette. So everybody ends up there. Adam and Chelsea get there first, and they decide that they need to get the coffin out of the house so that Mr. Sheffield can be out of his coffin when the sun rises, and they throw it into the lake. Mr. Sheffield does compel Lynette and ultimately bring her back to the mansion, and when he's there, he, like, gets a whiff of child, and he knows that Adam is in the house, and so he locates Adam, who's out in the lake sitting on top of the coffin, and like, I'll trade you your coffin for my mom. This, like, was a fine plan, but Chelsea is just, like, hiding nearby, so he just grabs Chelsea and is like, I'm gonna kill your mom and your sister. So he's like, okay. So they end up having to bring the coffin back inside, but that's when Van Helsing shows up. He left Taylor in the car, and he's like, I'll go get the vampire, and he does get a few good knocks in, but then the vampire just, like, knocks him right back down because he's faster and stronger. And so Mr. Sheffield is going to nom 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 on Van Helsing and the kids, and then Taylor shows up and he's got a stake, and there's, like, a whole thing. It's a whole thing, but it's also very slow and drawn out, where the vampire is just standing there like, ah, I'm gonna eat you guys. So it gives the kids enough time to, like, call out to their mom for help. And so they get through to her because true love of, you know, mom and kids breaks the curse. And she ends up being able to push the vampire. Van Helsing gets the coffin open. Mr. Sheffield lands in the coffin. And then Van Helsing, like, nails it shut with silver nails. And then everybody's like, oh, we did it. And the kids are like, what are you going to do with the vampire? And Van Helsing's like, murder him. And everybody's like, ah, ha, ha. And then Lynette is like, want to stay for pancakes, Van Helsing? And he's like, it's a date, but no more dates. Ha ha ha. The end.
Mari kind of already started this off, but because there are some extremely famous faces very famous to us, at least, faces. But Matt, where is the cast of this movie now?
Well, I feel like I should probably start by talking about Dimitri, played by Charles Shaughnessy. He did play Mr. Sheffield in The Nanny. So if anyone was not familiar with The Nanny and didn't know why Mari was calling him Mr. Sheffield, that is why.
Also, just, like, go watch The Nanny. What are you doing?
Awesome. Yes. It's probably streaming somewhere, but definitely worth a stream.
I've never watched it. So it took me a second of, like, was his name Dimitri Sheffield? And then I was like, oh, this is another.
When I was saying people who might not be familiar with The Nanny, I was kind of implying Sari.
Yeah. By people, I mean Sari. Sari is the people.
But yeah, since then, he's gone on to be in a bunch of things like Veronica Mars, Mad Men, Masters of Sex. The theme of today's thing is going to be almost everyone is still an actor. And we actually have three repeat performers who we've talked about before on this podcast.
Oh, no.
That's the sound of Sari not realizing that she has seen three of these people before.
No, I was so excited to recognize Aunt Hilda, like, one person. And then I didn't realize how much I was missing.
Well, yes, let's talk about Aunt Hilda, the other aforementioned but otherly named person in the plot synopsis. Caroline Ray plays the mom in this, but we're calling her Aunt Hilda because that's who she played in Sabrina the Teenage Witch, I think that's what most of us recognize her from, but she's a stand-up comedian, she hosts game shows, and she's continued acting in things like Phineas and Ferb, Ready to Rumble, Two Broke Girls, and recently reprising her role as Aunt Hilda in a couple episodes of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Oh.
Yeah, I have not watched that show, but there was like a little teaser that came out where the two aunts from Sabrina the Teenage Witch reprised their roles in a sort of like multiverse kind of episode of Sabrina.
Interesting. Weird. I only watched the first season, but
correct.
Yeah, I stopped after that too.
I have not seen the show, so I'm not entirely sure how they bring her into it, but it seemed weird in like a WandaVision kind of way from the clip I saw. But yeah, now she's playing the grandma on the Disney Channel show Sydney to the Max, which is another show I can't say that I have seen, but she's back on the Disney Channel. Next up, we'll get to one of the people we have seen before on this podcast, and that is the little one, Taylor, played by Miles Jeffrey. He was also the brother and stepsister from Planet Weird.
A child. I would not recognize a child.
They're all childs.
I know. They all blend together.
She's like, that's the point. That's why I don't recognize them.
They're all generic little, I don't know, maybe I just don't see children as full people yet, and so it's like, oh, you're just like small boy.
But yes, we talked about him on that episode a bit. He hasn't done a ton since acting on the Disney Channel movies, but he is the one that I mentioned previously has a Instagram account all about beer called @Brewlissies.
I have no recollection of you telling us about that, but delightful.
That's fine. I mean, it's like, it's one of those things where he has not gone on to be like, he's no Mr. Sheffield, obviously.
Right. Obviously.
The recognition's not there. But if you want to follow his beer Instagram account, it is @Brewlissies, and that seems to be tied to his grad school studies.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It's coming back to me now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
It also seems like he, similar to me in 2020, had to forego his original wedding plans and elope. So I feel that, Miles Jeffrey.
We have that in kinship. Common.
Another person we've seen before on this podcast, just going to keep this little section going, is Jake Epstein, who played Duffy in this, who is just a really small part. He's just the friend who tries to get the concert tickets, but he played Brad in Quince. Mm-hmm. So we talked about him on that episode. He went on to be on Degrassi, as well as a bunch of other things. More recently, he was on Star Trek Discovery, a movie called Mistletoe and Menorahs, and IMDb says he's going to be in the third season of The Umbrella Academy, which I don't think has started filming yet, so we'll wait and see on that one, but
interesting.
Potentially.
I didn't recognize him either. It was also just like, another generic boy.
He was the sad friend in Quince, the one that we were like, why...
We were concerned.
Why didn't anybody love him?
I had so many feelings toward him in Quince, and then now he was nothing. He was a nothing burger.
I mean, to be fair, in this, his role is pretty much just, hey, I got the concert tickets, and that's it. Yeah. He says that like five times.
He's there to make the concert tickets appear and disappear, and that's it.
And rounding out this little section within a section, we've got Laura Vandervoort, who played Chelsea, the older sister in this, who we also already saw playing Lauren in Alley Cat Strike.
Oh.
Yeah. So I didn't actually recognize her.
Okay.
That's weird. I didn't.
Maybe she had a growth spurt or something between movies and she just looks radically different. Who knows? But the other two guys I recognized, but her did not. Mm-hmm. But she went on to keep acting a bunch, including in Smallville and the TV show Bitten, where she played a werewolf, which felt relevant to this movie. And she just recently finished directing her directorial debut that she also produced and wrote, called My Soul to Take, which I don't think is out yet. But that was when I was looking up like what she's up to now. It was a lot about that movie. So we talked about Malachi Van Helsing in this, who's the vampire hunter. He's played by Robert Carradine, who I think a lot of people probably know him from Revenge of the Nerds, but I think a lot of the people who listen to this podcast probably know him best for playing Lizzie McGuire's dad.
Yes, that's correct. Also, people on this podcast who are me.
And not to be a stereotype of myself, but neither. Neither for me.
I mean, I'm not entirely surprised, but it would have been thrilling if you would have been like, oh yes, of course, Revenge of the Nerds, my favorite movie. But since this movie and after Lizzie McGuire, he's gone on to continue acting, including a role in Django Unchained. He's also a musician, and he was gonna be in the Lizzie McGuire reboot sequel series that seems like it's probably not happening now, so that's a bummer. But his Instagram is maybe the most like dad Instagram I've ever seen. It's mostly just pictures of motorcycles, And then like old photos of his kids and all this stuff. And it's just, it's delightfully dad, like normal dad Instagram.
I love that.
Oh, I am also realizing, speaking of older men on social media, I forgot to talk about Charles Shaughnessy's, what he's doing now outside of just, we've seen him in other things. His Twitter, I went and checked out, surprisingly, just very anti-Trump, very strongly political. Almost every single tweet is a political tweet where I was just like, oh, this is not what I was expecting, Mr. Sheffield. But he has been doing a series of podcasts and interview things called Conversations in the Time of Quarantine that benefits the Robert F. Kennedy Children's Action Corps. So he's doing this like interview series for charity on a regular basis during quarantine. So that is also, I watched a few minutes of it. It's a little bit dry and very political, so it's not necessarily like Mr. Sheffield reminiscing about his time in Hollywood. So go in with those expectations.
I will say this: I'm now looking at his Twitter, and this also has, it's like a different dad energy, but this also feels like, right, like your left leaning, very politically minded dad. If you were on Twitter,
yeah, where you'd be like, Dad, I agree with you, but you don't need to post every thought. And last but certainly not least, we have Adam, the main character, played by Matt O'Leary. Leary? I typed it wrong in my notes, I think. I think it's just O'Leary.
Yes, it is O'Leary.
This was his very first role, but definitely not his last. He's gone on to be in a bunch of things like Spy Kids 2 and 3, Brick, Santa Clarita Diet, and most recently, he's like a regular character on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh.
Yeah. I have not watched that show beyond the first couple episodes, so I don't actually know. He plays a character named Pax. That's all I know.
Okay. I did not recognize him at all, but yes.
He looks extremely different. Like, it's very clear that, like, obviously he was, whatever, 12, 13 in this, and he is, you know, aged to be a grown man.
Right.
So he's, like, tougher and beardy and stuff in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So he does look a lot different. But yeah, that is the cast of Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire and what they're up to these days.
While we have established that we have a lot of nostalgia for many of the actors in this movie, we're going to do a quick nostalgia check for the movie itself. Have any of you seen this movie before?
Nope.
Yes, I have. And in fact, I'm going to tell myself, Nicole and I were doing some of their content yesterday. So we were like talking, and after the call, she's like, yeah, I have to go watch this movie. Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire. I'd completely forgotten that this was like the next one we had to watch. And I legit like was like, oh, that's the one. I'm so excited.
So
this was one of the ones that I watched so much. So yes, I was excited to rewatch this one. Definitely remembered it very, very much. As I was watching, I was like, yes, all of these people, all of these things, familiar.
I am fairly certain I had never seen this movie before. Nothing about this was familiar.
And I definitely haven't, but I read a lot of Bailey School Kids books.
So, did you like it?
I did. It was enjoyable. There was things about it that I, like, I don't know, I didn't, like, fall in love with it as, like, a great cinematic masterpiece. But for me, one of the biggest things was that it wasn't as frustrating or annoying as some of the worst DCOMs we've watched. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a lot of, like, good little charming moments, but overall, it was just kind of, like, decent and not annoying.
Wow, the bar.
Yeah, top big review. Just like, you didn't annoy me, movie. Good job.
I also felt like it was middling for me, which wasn't a bad thing. When it comes to DCOMs, I think I'll remember it. And I'm putting it into my ranking list. And I think I'll put it right above Halloween Town. So like of the Let's Face a Big Monster Man movies, I think I liked it slightly better than
so far,
one.
Our reviews are, I'll remember it, and it wasn't annoying.
I really had fun, okay? I genuinely had a lot of fun watching this. I mean, I think as far as, like, ranking it goes, like, nostalgia goes a long way in terms of that. Like, I'm looking at the things that I have at my top five, that they're all things that I remember strongly from, you know, when I was a kid. And so it'll be hard for anything else to kind of break into that. that. But aside from lacking the nostalgia for it, I genuinely had a fun time watching this movie. And I don't know if it's the nostalgia that I had for all the actors or what, but like the, I loved the mom character. I felt for her. The fact that the resolution was, your mom loves you. great. Love it. Yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed this one.
I did as well. But I also agree that this is middling for me. So this will end up in the middle of the pack. But while I was watching it, I also just had a ton of fun. And I think that it is exactly what Matt is talking about. Like, there have been plot lines in a lot of the other ones that even when I was like, that wasn't bad, they were still things that if you thought about it all, like they could be frustrating or things like that. But this was just like, I don't know, because it was a romp and it was like the premise of it was silly, but the it followed its own logic in a way. I don't know. And the kids were fine and the mom was great. And I did like the resolution where it was like true love all along, which they seeded from the beginning. So yeah, I had a good time.
I felt like a lot of the vampire-y touches were very fun. I wasn't so sure when he turned into the gigantic CGI bat, and I was like, ooh, what was that? That was kind of scary. But I really, really liked the scene when they were in the restaurant, and like he as a vampire is coming up with this spoon test, and it just felt like all the character motivations made sense, and then I really liked seeing him in the mirror on the way out. I thought it was going to be something with garlic bread because he reacted so violently against it when they were like, would you like some garlic bread? And he was like, no. But Adam seeing him in the mirror and being like, oh shit, he is a vampire, was just like so delightful to me. And so I thought that they did a lot of those touches really, really well, where you like integrate vampire lore. So if you knew that as a child or as an adult, you could see bits and pieces of it. And be like, this is a vampire movie. This is like a goofy one, but he's a vampire.
I'm realizing, I think maybe I like this movie the most out of all of us, because like looking at the ranking sheets we have going, I ranked it 7th, which is like, it felt right, which is like just outside of that nostalgia zone you're talking about, Nicole, where it's like the top 6 are going to be really hard to break into. But like, I think there's so much about this that I do enjoy that it was like, oh, I could rewatch this tomorrow and not hate that. And whereas like some of these other ones, I'm like, oh, I'm good if I don't see that ever again, or like I could maybe watch that in a couple of years if someone wants to. But I think there's a lot of things about this just like story wise that I did enjoy. And I think some of the things were like, it takes place just like kind of over a weekend. It's not really long and drawn out. Like I was kind of afraid that like the mom was going to be in a trance and then they had to deal with that for like a month or two of like, oh, how do we save our mom? But it didn't let that carry on longer than it needed to. And then I also liked that the sister like called the little brother out on his shit at times where like there was like a very decommy moment where he was trying to get her to help him out. And he's like, I've changed so much. I'm a different person. And she's like, that was this afternoon. Like you have not changed that much since this afternoon. And I was just like, yeah, okay. We have a character who's like calling out some of the more tropey things that are happening. And that felt different in a good way.
I think that this, so I was looking, and I also enjoyed this movie, but yes, I think mine is closer to like being 10 or 11. I haven't actually decided on this list, but I think a big portion of it is that as the oldest one on this podcast, my like bubble of nostalgia is a lot more. Like it, like you said, top 6, and the ones that I've seen are going down to like the top 14 are all movies that I remember watching and have some nostalgia for. And I feel like this is going to flip flop when we get later and later. Like we're getting to the portion of years that I'm still watching all of these a lot, but we'll get sooner to the movies I have never seen. And I feel like that's when you guys are going to hit your peak of DCOMs, and then we'll like flip-flop on this whole nostalgia thing.
I feel like a lot of that is going to be more me than Matt, is my guess, because as I mentioned, I don't know, at some point on a previous episode, like looking at the list of DCOMs is also me realizing that like I was still watching the Disney Channel pretty regularly a lot later than I, like, if I had guessed, I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know, like middle school. Like, no, through 2006, which is the year I graduated from high school, I know those movies. But you're right, we are now coming up on like 2001 to 2006. So like end of middle school through the end of high school are the ones that I have seen, I think almost every single one of the movies. Starting next year, there will be like one movie a year. This is we have two more movies. This is the like third to last movie in the year 2000, and I haven't seen the rest of the year 2000 movies. But once we get to 2001 through 2006,
See, and I have like the opposite thing where there's like one a year that I have seen coming up, because I think what I realized going into this podcast is that like I thought I had seen a ton of DCOMs, but really I saw like 10 DCOMs a lot of times. And so like I'm very familiar with like 10 DCOMs, and the rest I'm like, that exists? Never heard of that. So yeah, it's been interesting realizing that I did not watch as many as maybe I didn't realize that this many existed. Maybe I thought they were like coming out every year or 6 months or something like that. And I was like, yeah, I've totally seen them all. But no, not anywhere close. I got a weird thing that I have to do this when I'm watching movies and I see this kind of thing pop up. The kid went to a website that was MalachiVanHelsing.com. And so I was like, well, we got to see if that does anything. So I went to it. It doesn't. It brings you to like a security thing of like, don't go to this website. It's probably broken. But you can, if you are interested, the URL is for sale. The minimum bid right now is $898.
Wow. So, no. Wow.
At first I was like, this would be a funny joke if it's pretty cheap that I could like get that URL and redirect it to our podcast. But then it was $900. Right. So that's not... The joke is not worth $900.
Sure.
I was going to say, like, we could, like, fundraise, but even if we raised $900, I'd be like, no, let's use that for something else.
Right? There's so many better things that we could do with $900. So,
host this podcast for one.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We're not going to just pay for a URL that will direct to the podcast that we still have to pay to host.
Right. I did really appreciate all the little internet nods, like, the pixelated web page waiting for it to load.
Yeah.
And I don't know, just their attitude towards technology of like, oh, he has an email, so he'll see it tonight. Don't worry about it. It was just like very funny to me.
It's the year 2000. Everybody has an email address. Yes.
But there was still like that. It was nice that like it seemed very of the era, but they were still very cautious about like emailing the stranger, because it was like, yeah, should we be doing this? This feels... Mm-hmm. A little wrong, but mm-hmm. I guess a concert and a date are worth it.
Those kids, when they grow up, though, gonna go on so many dates with strangers that they meet on the internet. Little do they know.
We talked, Nicole and I both mentioned how, like, the mom bit at the end, whereas, like, love for her kids that brought her out, that was, like, neat for the movie. But also just, like, the mom story in general. And... one of those moments where I was like, yep, definitely watching this as an adult, because I just felt so bad for her. She was doing her best the whole time. And then I didn't say it in the plot synopsis, but she gets like that invite or whatnot to her ex-husband's like wedding, and all the kids know about it, but this is how she's finding out, is like through this invitation. So she's like preparing herself to give a whole speech to her kids, like, sometimes this happens, but they know. And she realizes like she's the one that needs the comfort and the breaking of the news. So it was just like moments like that that I'm like, girl, I feel you. And then she's on this awful date, but she gets to like sing on the stage and have a nice meal, and she's like, man, I'm having fun. She had the best arc in the whole movie is what I'm saying. Yes. The mom.
Yes, for sure.
Absolutely.
The moment where she's like, I met someone special tonight and that's me.
Oh, you're amazing. Just like,
oh, beautiful. Snap. Beautiful. Like, it was so good. And I just love that, like, yeah, like we don't, the parents in DCOMs are not often fully formed characters. It's pretty much like, I'm busy businessman, I don't have time to be dad. And so seeing that, like, oh, she used to be in a rockabilly band and all this stuff, and she's struggling, and then, yeah, she ultimately chooses herself and her kids, and a vampire hunter. But she doesn't have to be saved from the vampire as such.
That was the one time in the movie I was genuinely scared, too, is when she was trying to turn him down on that date and be like, oh, I found myself and we're not actually that compatible because who I'm excited to be and who you are very different. And then he was like, no, I'm going to put you in a trance now. That felt very real to me as far as like abusive relationships go, or like my great fear of going on dates and meeting a guy who's going to murder me or something.
Please don't be a murderer.
Yeah.
But that, like, I think along with that, like from that moment on, the movie shifts tones in a way that I enjoy, that it like, it does become a little scary. Like that moment is sort of terrifying. And then the fight between Dimitri and Van Helsing is like legit. Like they are like throwing each other around, and like Dimitri actually seems like a threat, as opposed to like most of this movie, you're like kind of like, okay, yeah, he's a vampire. He hates garlic. Woo, he doesn't like rockabilly. You know, all those vampire tropes. But like in that scene, he actually gets like kind of scary. And it was like sort of ruined for me because they do this like really bad thing where like every shot has to be in slow motion to make it seem more dramatic, so that didn't work as well. But the part of him being like an actually threatening vampire worked really well for me.
The whole character of Van Helsing grew on me throughout the movie too. He started out when they introduced him in the grocery store and his first line was "Come to Papa." I was like, oh no. I hate this man and everything he stands for. And like whether he was the vampire or not, and like very clearly he was not after he was outside on his cell phone, but I was just like, I don't think I like this guy. He seems like sleazier than the actual vampire. But as he like did his buddy cop routine with Taylor and like shared his sandwich with him, he like grew on me as an endearing character. I did not like how he showed up to the house though, and the babysitter was just so fine with a child bringing a grown man in the house and be like, this is a vampire hunter. And she was like, okay, I'm going to go back to my phone call. Because I would also be freaked out in that situation. But I think that's where I have to suspend some disbelief.
The moment between him and Taylor in the car is very, very sweet and cute. There's a few lines in this movie that I was just like, oh, that's funny or cute. And one of them was when he gives Taylor the sandwich and Taylor's just like, did your mom make this for you?
Mm-hmm.
It's very sweet.
He's like, I don't live with my mom. And I was like, me neither.
One of my favorite side characters, I don't even know if he even like registers to anybody else, but I enjoyed him, was Jim, the man in the bar, who Adam walks up to in an attempt to distract his mom and get her to dance with somebody else. Mm. He walks up to this man and his first like, oh, hey, Bob. And he's like, no, my name is Jim. And he's like, oh, yeah, Jim. That's what they were saying. These girls in the back were talking about, you know, Jim can't dance. Da, da, da. And he was like, I dance all the time. And I just loved how confident this like character was. He's like, what'd they say about me? I dance all the time. They're wrong.
How dare you disrespect my dancing abilities.
I'll show them right now. I'm going to dance right here.
I also really liked the bouncers in the club for a similar reason, where Adam like, told them that someone was messing with him and his mom, and they were like, no one messes with Lynette, and then immediately kicked out Dimitri. And I was like, yeah, those are some good friends you have.
Yes.
They throw him out of that bar so hard. They like throw him across an alleyway through bicycles, and I'm just like, Jesus, like, I know he's a vampire, but geez.
Matt, no one messes with Lynette. Duh.
No, come on, Matt.
I won't.
Today we are going the really like cheap and easy road, and we're talking about vampire media because this is a vampire movie. Look, we're tired, okay? Our brains are tired. This is what we've got. So it seems like we all generally enjoyed this movie, but do you guys typically enjoy vampire stories more broadly?
This is definitely one of those things that, yes, I do in theory. Like, I seek them out. I enjoy them. But it's difficult for vampire media to do it right, or to do it in a way that I ultimately end up enjoying. So I feel like I consume a lot of it in search of like the tropes that I particularly like, but most of the time it's more like Twilight than like some of my favorite things. And I think part of that is that built into vampire lore, like there's a lot of different elements of it, but there is like a power dynamics thing that immediately comes into play with most fantasy creatures. So vampires are super powerful. A lot of times they can like enthrall people and like control them, and then it gets into weird places with like blood and blood play. So all of those things are really interesting but can be done wrong so hard and often are. So I love it in theory when I can find it done right.
I feel like I'm like the next stage removed from that, where my dad and my grandpa really love horror movies, and so I feel like they were kind of a background presence in my life. And when one showed up that they really liked, like I remember the vampire movie, I think it was Swedish, called Let the Right One In. My dad was like, this one's a good one. Watch it with me. But I kind of like absorbed vampire lore in the back of my head, but I never actively seek it out. So like I've never watched True Blood or like very loosely engaged with Twilight because it was set in Washington and I lived in Washington. So I was like, oh, like my dad read Twilight before it was popular because he was like, oh, I heard about this book that was vampires in Washington. And then he was like, it wasn't very good.
I love that.
Yeah. And so he like bought copies of Twilight and I read them too. And I was like, yeah, it was okay. And it was just like overblown in the state of Washington. Some people really cared, but most people were like, we are uninterested in the places that Stephanie Meyer is interested in. And so most of the vampire media I actively remember enjoying is like What We Do in the Shadows, or when you start getting into the parody territory where you take the vampire tropes and turn them on their head. And then I'm like, ooh, that is funny to me. But yeah, I don't know. So I guess I enjoy vampire content and I'll watch it always and I feel comfortable with it, but it's not like my comfort media in any way.
Yeah, I think Let the Right One In is one of the ones that I have really enjoyed too, because when I was looking through like lists of vampire media, not a lot of them jumped out at me as either things I've even seen or really like stuck with me. Like I've seen Blade, I've seen Twilight movies, I've seen Lost Boys, but like none of them really stuck with me. So I think Let the Right One In is definitely one that I enjoyed. And the remake is called Let Me In. That was also pretty good. And then the other two on this list that jumped out at me is ones I enjoyed at a time in my life that I don't think I would necessarily enjoy going back. One was Queen of the Damned, if anyone remembers that movie. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I didn't see it, but yes, I do. I vividly remember that time in our lives.
Oh yeah, it's like the most 2002 movie that exists. It's got Aaliyah, who plays the queen like vampire in it, and then all the music was done by Korn. So, you know, 2002. Yeah.
Big 2002 energy right there.
Yeah. And I was a very big fan of Korn and like new metal music in general. So that was the main reason I saw that one. And then the other one I really enjoyed, again, because I was a film school snob, still kind of am, but what definitely was, it was called Shadow of the Vampire. And this one, it has Willem Dafoe in it. And it's a very weird vampire movie because the premise is that it's the behind the scenes of the making of Nosferatu, like the 1922 movie. So it's a movie about making that movie. But the conceit is that the actor playing Nosferatu is actually a vampire. So he starts like killing people who are working on the movie and stuff. But yeah, I remember enjoying that at a time. But looking at like reviews and Rotten Tomatoes scores of it, I don't know that it's actually a good movie.
Yeah, I feel like I have no opinion whatsoever. Like I can think of vampire stories that I have enjoyed, but like thinking about Mari and Sari's answers about their sort of background with it, like there's nothing about a vampire story that in and of itself appeals to me. That would never be a reason that I'd be like, yes, I want to consume this thing. It is also not a reason that I would avoid it. I just have no opinion. I'm completely neutral on the concept of stories with vampires, but I like, I have, you know, have consumed a lot of vampire media. I also read all the Twilight books, have seen all of those movies. Things that I actually enjoyed, obviously Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and most of Angel, many parts of Angel, I also enjoyed a lot. Also, in the, like, early days of Snark Squad Pod, Nick Jenkins, who is a co-worker of most of ours, he came on and we sort of like let him pick the thing. It was like, okay, if you could watch a movie with us, what would it be? And he picked an 80s vampire movie called Near Dark that I only saw the one time, but I still remember it pretty vividly, pretty clearly, and I enjoyed it. So if you do love vampire stuff, I will put it out there that that 80s vampire movie is not bad.
The hearing you guys also talk about this makes me like think about how I haven't watched a lot of movies, especially like classic vampire movies, which is interesting for me because I just was the one who was like, I love vampire stories. but I read a lot of books that have like vampire elements in it. So some of them are like urban fantasies that have like a bunch of creatures, including like werewolves and vampires are included, like the Kate Daniel series, the Mercy Thompson series. But some of my favorites, if you are interested, are Certain Dark Things by Sylvia Moreno Garcia, which is a vampire story that is like rooted in Mexican like lore, mythology, and history. So it is it's like a really fresh take on vampire lore, and she does interesting things with like their powers and all of that, so it doesn't feel as like tropey and rote as some of these other things. And also Fledgling by Octavia Butler. So in Fledgling, she takes like a lot of the creepier elements that people tend to gloss over with vampires, like often they are really old and dating children and the whole like in your thrall thing. And she like ups the creepiness of them in a way where reading this is incredibly uncomfortable. But you can tell that she's doing it on purpose to like put in your face like, is this what you like? And you're reading it like, oh, is it? Oh, no.
No, I don't like it. Stop.
I don't like it at all.
The most recent piece of quote unquote, very liberally using this term, vampire media that I watched is the YouTuber Jenny Nicholson, who does a lot of like pop culture-y videos, just put out a video all about the Vampire Diaries, and it's like a 2.5 hour long video. And I have never watched an episode of the Vampire Diaries, but I watched Jenny Nicholson's entire video because of her. Just because of her and the way she talks about media, I usually really enjoy. So I watched that entire video and I know so much about the Vampire Diaries now that I never wanted to know. And I probably will forget next week, but that video was really good.
I saw that video come up and I was like so excited, but I have not seen it yet because we actually recently started recapping the Vampire Diaries on Snark Squad. And I know a few things about it, but I want to remain as unspoiled as I can be in the year 2021 about like
she spoils plot of everything. Yeah. So
I was like, I can't watch this. So I am currently in misery in season one watching this.
I was, I think the closest I got to watching those things was like, I worked at Hot Topic during Twilight True Blood Vampire Diaries years. And so I got to witness like what was popular via what t-shirts we were carrying and what team people were buying the shirts of and all that stuff. And like, I never saw most of those things, but I sold a lot of pieces of jewelry that were replica pieces of jewelry from the TV shows and the movies and the Team Edward shirts and all that stuff. So I have that connection to vampire media. Maybe that put me off of it a little bit.
My main association with the Vampire Diaries is the TikTok sound that's like, I love Elena. I would die for her. I'm going to kill Elena. I don't know like what the context is for that, but I love it. I love that sound.
We've mentioned it a couple times, but to really round it out here, I want to be clear that I fucking hate Twilight. Passionately. Whoa. From the bottom of my soul, like I hate it so much. Not only like the work itself, which is garbage, but all of the Twilight stands, Mm-mm, no good. Don't like it. Sorry if that's you. I don't like you on principle, I guess. I don't know.
I feel like I watched the first three movies. I don't really remember how many I've seen. They're all right. I don't remember anything about any of them.
I mean, the movies are an improvement over the books in that they're shorter. And that, first of all, they're shorter. And second of all, like, the screenwriters made an actual attempt to sort of bridge some gaps and, like, smooth out some pacing. Yeah, add plot. But also just, if you somehow don't know, love yourself and stay that way.
Also, to clarify my deep hatred, don't support Stephanie Meyer because her books are racist pieces of trash. It is like literally, don't support Stephanie Meyer. It's like my whole thing.
Yeah, I feel like my frustrations with Twilight have grown as I've grown up too, where at first it was an annoyance in high school where other girls mostly in my high school, and this is also when I was in my I'm not like other girls, even though my friends were girls phase, where I was like, I'm not like the Twilight girls. But people in my school, which was right outside of Seattle, would take a trip to the Washington Peninsula and visit Forks, Washington, which is just where old people live. And then they started turning it into a tourist town where they like had the vampire doctor dad's parking spot marked off at the hospital, which I'm sure was very annoying for actual doctors who worked there. And like generic trinkety things, but they would go and like have their parents take them on a weekend trip to the peninsula when there are so many more like cooler things you could do, and just did not make any sense to me. They started putting Forks, Washington on weather maps, and I just didn't pay very close attention to weather maps on the news when we were like, I don't know when I was watching the news, but all of a sudden people like cared about the weather in Forks. No one cared about the weather in Forks until Stephanie Meyer said it was rainy all the time. And then as I was growing up, it became from an annoyance to actually like, oh, Stephanie Meyer just took the name of a Native American tribe and just decided to do whatever she wanted with it. And that's bad and weird, and they're not comfortable with it, and just like the problems go deeper and deeper.
I mean, she not only took their name, she took their lore and like is profiting off of it currently, and has never done anything for these people. Never. Yeah. So she's making money off of appropriating their culture badly, because all of the Native characters in her stories are tropes and they're badly used. And she literally spends four books calling them smelly dogs. And then she's making millions of dollars off of them, and they're fundraising to try and get their schools out of flood zones because they have at-risk children in these flood zones in Forks, Washington. I'm sorry. Do not support Stephanie Meyer. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Read other vampire media.
And now it is time to discuss the lessons that we learned from Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire.
I'm going to steal the obvious one because it's a quote from the movie, and that is, a cell phone is to a teenager what a coffin is to a vampire.
I'm going to say that this movie taught me this lesson, but it's just like a life lesson. Dating sucks, man.
I thought you were going to say this one, Matt, because it was obvious to me, which is pick your screen name before all the good ones are taken, because then you're a vampire who sounds like a werewolf online. Very not cool.
Yeah, because all the teenagers took the good vampire names.
Yeah.
And I learned that vampires also, in addition to not liking Italian food, don't like wine. They don't drink wine. So that's... That was news to me.
Yeah, I was hoping for more explanation on that one, but we did not get it.
Nope.
Wine's just fake blood, Nicole. And they trick you into thinking you think it's going to be yummy blood, and then wine.
Gross. And to close out this episode, it is time for Sari to guess the plot of the next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we will be watching Phantom of the Megaplex.
Okay, so this one's a little tricky. I'm not entirely sure I know what a megaplex is. so I could go completely off the rails right at the beginning. But it sounds like Cineplex, and so it sounds like it'd be like a large movie complex, sort of like an AMC theaters. So I'm going to go with that, and I'm going to go with a Scooby-Doo-like plot. So there is this movie theater that people have said is haunted, but we're not really sure. Like maybe there's things like the popcorn machine turns on without you knowing, or a movie starts playing without anyone running the projector. And people have just chalked it up to like, those teenage pranks. But then there is a teenager who probably works at it, who has like a Scooby gang of friends, like two other friends. The person who works there is named Fred. And then, or Freddy. Let's go Freddy.
Just steal straight from Scooby-Doo.
To borrow, excuse me.
Sorry, yes.
And they don't have a dog in this one, but there's just like, there's another guy whose name is Steven and a girl whose name is Darlene. So we got Freddy, Steven, and Darlene. They don't have a Velma, but they're investigating why this movie theater is like this, because Steven is really into the supernatural and thinks that there is an actual ghost. And I don't know how they would be able to do this movie in a serious way. I feel like this is going to definitely be one of the fantastical DCOMs that we've seen, like the one we just watched with an actual vampire. So there's actually going to be a ghost here. And I'm going to phone a friend for the tagline before I go too off the rails.
It is at least going to help you with your decision about what a megaplex is. The Cotton Hills Megaplex has 52 employees, 26 theaters, 8 concession stands, and 1 unwelcome guest.
Okay, good movie theater. Got it on lock. That is a very large theater. I guess that's why they call it a megaplex. So yeah, I guess the unwelcome guest is the ghost. I really don't know how you motivate a teenager to care about a ghost besides his friends are into the supernatural. So I'm going to go with that. And then they watch like the knockoff Ghostbusters, and then they get the idea to like vacuum up the ghost. And then it ends up with like a really big showdown of them getting sucked into a movie, okay, and battling the ghost in like some black and white scenery. And then eventually they like rip out of the movie screen. They've banished the ghost from the realm being planet Earth. And their manager walks in and is like, "What the heck happened to this movie screen?" And the teenager is like, and puts his head in his hands of like, "You don't realize how much trouble I saved you." And then the end.
That is quite a guess. Join us next time to find out if any of that is correct. If you are enjoying this podcast, tell your friends, rate and review it, all of that good stuff. We would love to hear all of your thoughts. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at snarksquad.com/decom, or you can find us on Twitter at Decom Squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Maridane.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
This podcast is a Snark Squad production, edited by me, transcribed by Mari, and our theme music is by Stefan Chin.